So the problem I'm going to talk is passive scalar turbulence. And the general motivation for the work were discussions with many people, among whom there are in the rooms, about the Kreisner model. So the problem is, the Kreisner model, you can solve the problem, you can see that there is intermittency, but the hypothesis and the assumption about the model look so peculiar that in a sense you can worry whether you learn anything about the real passive scalar, where, for example, you have finite correlation times. So the question is, and in particular you could wonder whether the physical mechanism that were found at the origin of the passive scalar anomalous scaling in the Kreisner model are the same for the kind for the case of finite correlation times. So, and I will try to convince you that indeed the mechanisms are the same, and to show so that the preserved structure that Itamar was discussing the other day, they are present in general. So that's the mechanism in general for the passive scalar intermittency. So let me. So Itamar did a very nice review of the Kreisner model, so I can go pretty fast on this. So that's the equation of the passive scalar plus injection that in general you do by in the Kreisner by a random forcing, but you can take a mean gradient. So the major assumption is that V is shortly correlated in time, which means that this second order correlator is proportional to delta of t minus t prime. And that's the major assumption because the consequence is that the correlation function, equal time correlation function of the scalar, they obey closed equation of motion, which is pretty peculiar of the delta correlated case. So I have schematically indicated the kind of equations that you get here, where Mn is a differential operator, second order elliptic singular operator, and there are injection related terms. So the nice observation made by Cherkov, Falkovich, Lebedev, and Kolokolov, Schreimann, Sija, and Gavesky, Kupiainen is that now, if you look at this equation and you look for a stationary state and you try to balance right-hand side and left-hand side, you get anomalous scaling. So intermittency must necessarily come from zero modes. That is equation of these solutions of this equation, Mn Zn equal to zero. So now, once you know this, then you can, sometimes you can solve these equations, for example, exactly in the second order magnetic field. Some other times for the passive scalar you need to go to perturbation theory, but what is important is that the intermittency is always coming from zero modes. So then you look at them in the Lagrangian space. And the Lagrangian space, the equivalent of the closed equations, is the Markov property of Lagrangian correlations. And the key for intermittency is what Itamar was discussing the other day, that is the figures which are identified by the particles dynamics. And you find that while the size of this figure grows with time according to dimensional argument, the shape is not predictable by dimensional arguments. And this is essentially the origin and of intermittency. Now, the other fact that I will discuss is the fact that in the Kreisner model, you can argue discuss the behavior of high-order structure function, and in particular, the nice prediction which is made is that in the Kreisner model, these exponents, they should saturate for large enough n. This follows from, in large dimension, it's a beautiful work by Balkowski and Lebedev, who can essentially solve the problem and show that this is the case. In three dimensions, there's an upper bound, which is found again by Instanton by Misha Cherkov. There's a phenomenological prediction by Victor Yakot, and there's also numerical evidences that this is indeed the case. Pardon? Well, in the instantons, you need to take n large enough. It is proportional to the dimension, so it is large. In the numerical simulations, what you see is that this n, where you saturate, is a growing function of gamma 2 minus xi. So for example, when you take gamma small enough, you can see saturation already at the fourth or sixth order. Now when you take gamma order unity, like in the direct numerical simulations, the order where you should see saturation is so large that you don't see it. Gamma is the holder exponent of the velocity field, 2 minus, okay? The 2 minus that one. So now the problem is what happens to a passive scalar now in a velocity field which is not delta correlated in time. And since it is pretty difficult to generate a velocity field with finite correlation time, a synthetic velocity field, so what we decided to do is to let the dynamics generate by itself the velocity field. So we took a two-dimensional Navier-Stokes equation here, and we coupled it with this passive scalar equation. Now, the advantage of this equation, there's actually in the simulation, there's a friction term, is that V is produced by an inverse energy cascade. It was already discussed, so I don't need to go through this. But what is important is that V is non-intermittent. So again, the only source of intermittency is coming just from this term. But now the advantage with respect to the Kreisner model is that the correlation time is finite and it's dynamical. So there's now the correlation time is finite, which means that the scalar field does not have the property anymore that there are closed equations and all the nice properties of the Kreisner model. Now about the injection here, we are interested in probing the universality properties of the scalar, so we took two different kinds of injection mechanisms. One is a random forcing, it's a Gaussian field here, random forcing on the large scales. And the other one is closer to experiments, is to take a mean gradient and to integrate for the fluctuation field, and you integrate this equation here. So let me first show you the results and the phenomenology of the field. First of all, that's a typical snapshot of the field. This case is with a mean gradient. The mean gradient is this way. This is 2D. Yeah. So the velocity field is generated by inverse energy cascade. So it is k to the minus scaling with r n third. And you plug the scalar in, and that's the typical snapshot of what. It's a mean gradient. Structure, you mean a snapshot of the field? No, I don't. But it's a typical 2D field in inverse energy cascade. So there are very small scale vortices, and they tend to cluster together, and no particular. Right. But the velocity statistics is very close to Gaussian. I mean, you can detect deviations from Gaussianity, but they are really small. I mean, they're really small. Okay. This way. Yeah, and the coding is the usual one. So blue is cold, and yellow is hot. Right. So, but the injection scale of the velocity is the friction scale, so it is a very large scale. Okay, and in the random force case, very large scale. It's an inverse cascade. So, for example, let me show you the spectrum of the velocity. Maybe it's going to help. Okay. So the injection for the velocity is here. Then you have the inverse cascade, and then you have friction here, which is extracting the energy. So what you do is that you pump more or less at this scale, and once you inject by mean gradient, you are around here. And this is the Kolmogorov law for the velocity. So there is an inverse cascade, and it's pretty clean. Pardon? I did not force? Sure, we did. It is force. Yeah. I'm random forcing here. Here, in this wave numbers band. I'm forcing on small scales, otherwise they would not be inverse cascade. Doesn't show. Yeah, it's very small compared to this. Yeah. 2048 squared. So these are the single point PDFs of the scalar. In the random force case, you get essentially a Gaussian, and in the mean gradient case, you get a sub-Gaussian, like in the experiments by Yayesh and Varaft and Midlarsky. They got the sub-Gaussian, and this is also the case here. So the PDF is not universal, it depends on the injection type. So now let's see the scaling behaviors of the moments. These are the second and the fourth order moment. So the second order moment is essentially r to the two-thirds. There's no intermittency correction. While the fourth one is slightly intermittent. What is interesting is the fact that the two scaling exponents, this is local slopes, are the same for the two cases. Now, the other interesting observation is that you reproduce the same behavior about anisotropies as in 3D experiments. This is the behavior of the third and the fifth order structure function. And when you take the skewness, for example, you reduce by S2 to the 3/2, you get something which is slightly decreasing with the scale. But when you take the fifth order and you divide by S2 to the 5/2, you get R to the minus 0.2, which is increasing with the scale. So again, the scalar field remembers the injection on the large scales. So it remembers the fact that you have a mean gradient, exactly like in 3D experiments. But there are universal quantities. There are universal quantities, and the universal quantities are the scaling exponents. So in the two cases of shear and random force, you can see that the scaling exponents are the same. So despite of the fact that the PDFs are not the same, this one is much more rounded than this exponential one here, you get the same scaling exponents, which means that the PDFs are not universal, which means that as in the Kreisman model, the constant in the correlation functions are not universal, but the way the PDFs rescale with R are the same, so that you get the same scaling exponents. So just now, another remark is that when you take the third order structure function without absolute value and with absolute value, the values that you get, the one without absolute value is above the one with absolute value, which is telling you that it is true that the scalar field, that the anisotropies in a sense are persisting, but it's also true that they are persisting in a very special way, which means that if you take a fixed amplitude, if you plot, for example, the antisymmetric part of the PDF divided by the symmetric part of the PDF, this ratio is decreasing with the scale. So it means that the fact that when you divide S5 by S2 to the 5/2, this is increasing with the scale, it's really a coupled effect of intermittency and anisotropy. If you take a fixed amplitude of the fluctuation, this ratio is going to decrease to zero with the scale. So this is essentially the phenomenology. The scalar field has an anomalous scaling, the scaling exponents are universal, the prefactors are not, and this is the behavior of the anisotropies. So let's now try to understand something using the Kreisman model. So first of all, let's go to look for saturation. Why should we expect saturation? Well, in a sense, the Kreisman model is the worst case for saturation, because if there is saturation, saturation is certainly due to the formation of cliffs. And in order to form a cliff, what you need is that you need your velocity field to be in a hyperbolic point and to compress for long enough from large scales to small scales. So you need a persistence of your compression for long enough to make the cliff deformed. And since the Kreisner model is delta correlated in time, this is clearly tough to make. It is still possible because what you care about is the integrated effect. And if you integrate the delta correlated process, this is a Brownian motion. And the Brownian motion persists on one side of the axis, has persistent property very long. So you can still form cliffs. But clearly, the Kreisner model is the worst case. So if there is saturation in the Kreisner model, what you expect is that it should be there for any case. So let's see what happens in this 2D case. These are the scaling exponents here, and these are the behavior of the moments. Now, we are measuring 14, which is pretty delicate, so let me show you immediately the convergence of these moments. So this is the usual test. You plot the scalar difference times the PDF at the power that you want to measure, and you check for convergence. And you can see that even for 14, these curves are going down so that the moments are converged. So once you look at this curve, well, the exponents are clearly compatible with saturation, but because of the presence of error bars, you could say that there is still a slight slope and start arguing about this. So we looked for a different check of the saturation, and the different check of the saturation is the collapse of the PDF. If you have structure functions behaving this way with an exponent which doesn't change with the order, then you just sum up the characteristic function and you should get that the PDF should have the form r to the zeta infinity times a function q of delta r of t divided by trms. That's equivalent to saturation. So if you plot now r to the minus zeta infinity times the PDF, you should see a collapse. And that's indeed what you see here. Now, the scales are such that this is not really a test, but now you can start looking at the behavior in much more detail. And for example, you look here at the accumulated probability that the fluctuations are larger than lambda TRMS. So if there was saturation, then you should see a straight line, and all the curves should be parallel. And this is the compensated plot of all this. And indeed, you see a straight line with, and the exponents is zeta infinity, the same that you got there. And furthermore, if you compare the behavior for the two cases of shear and random force for a special value of lambda 2.5 TRMS, that's what you get. The two curves are again parallel. So the evidence is that in this case, there is indeed saturation. Now, in general, what do you expect? Well, you expect that there will be the same phenomenon, but the order might change with the type of velocity field. For example, in 3D, the order might be different. It might not be 10, it might be higher, but that the same phenomenon should be there. So you expect this in general. Now, just for, since this morning we have been talking about the linear ansatz and the conditional dissipation, this is the conditional dissipation versus scalar differences. And what you see is a nice linear behavior as predicted by the linear ansatz. And it's nice that this curve starts departing from the linear ansatz precisely at TRMS. And TRMS is not by accident the values where you start getting the cliffs. So the curve departs from the linear ansatz precisely where you start getting saturation. Well, which is another way of looking at the same phenomenon. By the way, there's a nice work by Kreisner in 97 where he predicts precisely that this curve should flatten here for an exponential PDF like the one we have. So that's for intermittency. So let me now move to the origin of intermittency. Let me just remind you briefly what Itamar was discussing last day. So what happens in the Kreisner model? In the Kreisner model, the Lagrangian trajectories are Markovian because of delta correlation in time. And the Markovianity reflects in the fact that you have closed the equation for the PN, the propagators, which tell you if I was starting R0, 1, R0, 2, R0, N at time 0, the probability to be in R1, Rn at time t. I have closed the equation for this, and the closed equations are these ones, where Mn is the same is the same operator at the very beginning. So it's the second-order differential operator as for the correlation functions. Now, what happens in general? Well, in general, if you take n particles and you let them go, what happens is that the figure which is defined by this particle will grow with time. And in particular, if you take a homogeneous function of R1, Rn, so of homogeneity degree lambda sigma, what you expect is that, for example, in the 2D Navier-Stokes flow, where you have a typical time which goes like 2/3, an exponent 2/3, that this function here, if you calculate the average of a function along the trajectories, that this function will grow with time like the homogeneity degree divided to gamma. So, for example, if you take R squared, the sides of the figure, then this will grow like 2/2, which is T cubed, is the Richardson law. Now, this is what you have in general. So you take any function, and that's what you expect. So now, what are the zero modes? The zero modes are special functions which are preserved by the advection. And the fact that they are preserved is really the definition of a zero mode, because what is the average of this quantity? The average of this quantity is just the Zn times Pn integrated over x1, xn. So now what's d over dt of this quantity? Well, it's just dt of this, which you read from here equal to that. And now Mn is a self-adjoint operator, so you can move the derivative the other way around. And so what you get is minus Mn Zn, which is by definition equal to zero. So you get that this average here is preserved. So now what about the general case? Well, in the general case, we do not have these equations. These equations are specific of the delta correlated case. So we cannot use this equation in the general case. Still, yes, Boris. Is that then? Right. So you're taking the particles, the size is growing. It is a zero mode. No, which function? That's right. That's right. That's changing. So what is happening is that the size is growing, so it is growing with time, but the angular part is going to zero in such a way that you compensate for the other one, and the result is a constant. That's the special property of the zero mode. What's wrong in that? Pardon me? Okay, good. So now, in the generic case, what can we say? Well, we do not have Fokker-Planck equations for Pn. Still, this idea that there are preserved structures has nothing to do with delta correlation in time. So it is a very generic and physical idea that you have a function which under advection is preserved by advection. So the mean of this function under advection is preserved. It's such a general idea that looks so robust that it's worth trying whether it works or not in general. So let's just try to see, to do exactly what we would do as in the Kreisner model, and see if the dynamics accepts this. Okay? If the correlation functions are indeed dominated by zero modes, which are preserved structures by the dynamics. So in the Krasnov model, you can show that the green function here can be decomposed in this way. So what you need to do to measure zero modes is that you take a big figure, and you need to look at the configurations which are shrinking, where the particles are getting close together. So the non-typical configurations where the figure is shrinking will give you precisely the zero modes. Now, the problem is that there are many zero modes, including, for example, constants, so you need to filter out the constant, for example, in order to see the real zero modes that you care about. But that's the way you can measure zero modes just by Lagrangian dynamics. So, well, in general, the technical problem is that you have a function here that lives in a very big space. The dimension is d minus 1 times the number of particles, n minus 1 times d. So you need, you need to do it technically. So the best is to start with, the best is to do it for the simplest case, which is the 3 points. You've seen that the 3 points are intermittent, so let's do it for 3 points. And 3 points, we could save a lot of work thanks to the previous work of Pumir, Scheinman, and Sija, who looked at the 3 point correlation function in the Krasnov and related models. So what you do to characterize, to parameterize a triangle shape, well, you move from R1, R2, R3, the position of the point. You define new variables, ρ1 and ρ2. You eliminated the center of mass. And the nice feature of this transformation is that it's an orthogonal matrix. And then you can decompose the ρi according to this formula. Well, it looks complicated, but in fact, what is going on is that phi is the global rotation angle. So once you define the shape of a triangle, then you can rotate this triangle, and phi is this global rotation angle. The size of the triangle is defined by ρ1 squared plus ρ2 squared, which is equal to ψ1 squared plus ψ2 squared. And then you have two internal angles, which define the shape of the triangle. One is chi, here, and the other one is the ratio between the area of the triangle and the size of it. So these are two internal angles. And you have to play with the symmetries of this parametrization. But you can restrict to 0 to 1 in W and 0 to pi over 6 in chi. And the other point is that you, for the 3-point function, the dominant contribution is coming from the J equal 1. It is the first one that appears in the 3-point. So you are just interested in J equal 1, which means that the dependence of the 3-point function will be you are looking for a cosine of phi. So what you do now is that you take the triangles, you make them shrink, and you look at the configuration, and you measure the green function of this. And that's what you get. This is the contour lines of the probability distribution that you get in the space chi w. So phi is cos phi. And then you have another dependence, which is the size of the triangle that you have. And the first nice surprise is that the scaling in L is precisely L to the minus zeta 3, where zeta 3 is the exponent that you have been measuring from direct numerical simulation of the structure function. So here you can see that by symmetry, equilateral triangle is zero, and there's a nice feature that the triangles tend to be very elongated, which is reflecting the fact that you tend to be close to bachelor, so you tend to form these elongated triangles. Always 2D. Working in this field, 2D, so I'm putting particles here in this 2D field, which is Navier-Stokes, so it's non-delta correlated, and I'm looking at how triangle shrinks, and that's the distribution. Okay? The other nice thing is that when you look at the third-order correlation function, if the mechanism was the same, the third-order correlation function should be dominated by a zero mode, and this should be. And indeed, when you plot the third-order correlation function, you can measure it just by Eulerian field, that's precisely this. So what remains now, to close the circle, oh, by the way, that's the same figure that you can get, that's the from a Malan paper. That's the incrational model. The figures really look like each other. So what remains to be done is just to show that this function is indeed preserved. And that's what you have here. So this is just the behavior of R to the zeta 3. So without any angular part to cancel the growth of the size. So this one should go like t to the zeta 3 over gamma, and indeed what you get is here. Now, here is the behavior of r to the zeta 3 times now the angular part, the zero mode. So here you measure the evolution in time of the zero mode, and what you see here is that the angular part is precisely canceling the growth in r in such a way that what you get here is a constant. So conclusion, it's here. Intermittency seems to be always related, even in the cases where you don't have a closed equation, to preserve structure. So this really seems to be the mechanism for passive scalar intermittency. Now, in Navier-Stokes, I don't know, but at least for passive scalar, this really seems to be the mechanism for intermittency. Thank you. This one. What happens is this. You put a triangle. The triangle is going to grow. Okay? So you have a factor in R which is going to increase. But then also what happens is that the triangle tends to a shape which is going on this side here. Okay? So it's tending, for example, to an isotropic form, to equilateral form. So what happens is that R is growing. The other one is going to peak into the zeros of this. So the radial part is compensated by the angular part. No. I which one? This one? No, but this is just a picture. This is just a picture to indicate the shapes which are related to the various value of chi and w. No. You just take it and you let it go. No, I don't risk it. Right. No? Well, this is the third order correlation function. Theta 1, theta 2, theta 3, this is the function, times r to the zeta 3. So the third order correlation function is r to the zeta 3 cosine of phi times this function. That's it. Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's going to be tough to... Mm-hmm. Well, you discussed with Grish, yeah. No, I'm measuring, look, I fully agree with what Alain was saying yesterday. If you take the time-dependent problem, you will not see zero modes. Just because zero modes refer to the initial position. So if you take this and you let them go and grow, you will not see them. You have to make them shrink. And I'm looking at the green function. I'm not looking at the... And I'm just making the link afterwards. I'm showing you that in general, The problem of growth is, of course, time-dependent. But there are special functions, and that's precisely the zero mode, which are stationary. So everything is non-stationary in this. Of course, everything is growing. But there are special things, which are these zero modes, which are preserved. And that's why they are special, that's why... I'm plotting a zero mode. This is a zero mode, and I've shown you that it's preserved. Because I just put the particle in, I calculate the average of this guy and this constant.
But I'm looking at something. Mode, by definition, is annihilated by the evolution operator.
Right.
So I don't understand,
if you have a closed equation, I agree with you that I just take the equations and I do everything. Now, the non-trivial point is, do I have the same structure of the propagator in the non-delta correlated case where I cannot take the equations and show that this is the case? That's the problem. Right? If you wish, this is the third order correlation function. I'm taking the third order correlation function, and I'm taking... Right. I'm measuring the Eulerian third order correlation function. I put particle in, and I calculate the evolution, and that's constant, which to me says that this is a zero mode, in the sense of preserved structure. Well, what I... Sure.
Very quickly.
This average here, okay, you take the function, okay, you have a function of x1, x2, x3. Now you put particles in, they will evolve, and you calculate f along these trajectories. And then you average over Lagrangian trajectories. And the behavior is this. Okay? What do you mean? The results? Well, I knew all these results for Crash, and that's why I was looking for them in the non-delta correlated case. They all are there for Crash, and that's why I'm looking for them here. I'm taking the Crash model to learn something and then to try. Otherwise, I certainly wouldn't have had the idea to look at this function in the non-delta correlated case, for sure. I mean, okay.